that just signals a few of our that how busy we are, I guess. Tomorrow, I think it, I'm not sure if we're already filled up for our lunch or not tomorrow, but we have a terrific lunch session on Black natural law with theologian, political theologian, Vincent Lloyd. And the law school dean, Vincent Rougeau, will be responding, and Craig Ford will be responding as well. We had to dangle some bait out there. And that's going to be a terrific conversation here in the room. We have other lunches. You'll see Marilyn Johnson from the History Department will be speaking on immigration. Also on Wednesday the 21st, we have a very interesting speaker. This is the flyer we put together for it so far. Christian Felber is an Austrian writer and activist who is a leader in a social movement to rethink what the economy is about. And from what I can tell, from I'm still learning about his work, but from what I can tell, it's a largely secular parallel to a lot of the Catholic social discourse we have about thinking about the economy as working for people and not the other way around. And so I'm excited to have this sort of conversation. Ken Himes has helped us put it together along with the new, relatively new interdisciplinary minor called Managing for Social Impact and the Public Good. So that's going to be a really interesting program next Wednesday, 5:30. One other thing that I'll mention, I really hope that you'll tell your students and colleagues about this. It's called, we're calling it Speak, Stand, Sit, or Scream, Engaging Politics and the World as Young People in 2016. And here we have an attempt to, rather than tell young people what we think they're saying or tell them what they need to be thinking and saying, rather pausing and listening and let young people tell each other and us exactly how they're experiencing not only the sort of toxic political rhetoric that we're wading our way through during the end of the campaign here, but just broader tensions in life right now. What does it mean to think about racial justice today? What does it think? What does it mean to be civically engaged? What does it mean to be a citizen, et cetera? And I'm really excited about that conversation. Craig will be returning again as one of the four participants for that, but also three undergrads, Isra Hussain, Naja Koso, and Russell Simons. We'd love to have a really packed room full of students, and of course we hope a lot of us old people come too and learn, but please, we'll be sending stuff around to everybody, but please let your students know about this, because I think it could be a really meaningful town hall discussion. All the other stuff you can look at online and on this handout sheet. I don't want to take more time from Megan's talk. So thank you for being here, and our program coordinator, Suzanne Hevelone, has been doing so much work on all of these things. We'll introduce Megan.
Well, it's my privilege to introduce Megan. So Megan is Associate Professor of the Practice of Theology. She joined the BC faculty in 2006 to teach in the Pulse program. That's when I got to know her, fortunately. And in 2014, in June, she became the program's Cooney Family Director. Is it Cooney?
Mm-hmm.
She's also active in parish ministry. She's an Episcopal priest, and she's been a hospital chaplain, a campus minister, and has obviously volunteered in a variety of community organizations. So we'll all learn a little bit about Pulse and service learning. We're delighted to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I know almost everyone in the room, and so I actually would like to go around and do names in the spirit of Pulse and community building. Great. It would actually be helpful for me, too, and also good for us to hear each other's names. So
I'm Suzanne Hevelone. I'm the program coordinator.
Actually, you and I have known each other for 20 years.
Have we really?
At Harvard Divinity
That's
School.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.
Good Lord. A long time ago in our lives. So, yeah.
But we're still young.
That's right. We're still young.
I'm Craig. Anything else? Oh, what?
Tell them where your program.
Okay. I'm Craig. I'm a...
you just go by one name? You're like Beyonce?
I'm Adele, yeah.
You're
like
Beyonce. A lot like Beyonce.
Yeah. Buy my CD. All right. I'm Craig Ford. I'm a fourth-year student in the theology department. I do ethics. And then I also am the executive director of the Graduate Student Association here.
I'm Ken Himes in the theology department. I teach ethics.
Liz Aquino, director of the Advising Center at the School of Social Work.
I'm Tom Fratz. I'm the grad student coordinator here at the Boise, and I'm an eighth-year in Bible in the theology department.
I'm Anna Marie Murphy. I'm with Boston College Magazine.
Susan Richard. I'm from the Boise Center.
Maria Cookham. I'm from the Classics Department.
I'm Tracy Ainsworth from the English Department.
Bethel Charquidian from the Community.
I've introduced myself. Kristen?
I'm Kristen Heyer from the Theology Department. I also teach ethics.
Hi, I'm Dominic. I'm a senior, and I took Pulse my sophomore year and took a couple of electives, too.
Excellent. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Kathy Bailey, I teach in political science and Islamic civil societies.
I'm Omid Al-Adadi. I'm a junior at UC, and I'm an undergrad research assistant here.
Great. Thank you. I've divided up things into three basic parts. The first is just some considerations about service learning in general. The second is considerations of Pulse as a service learning program. And then third would be just maybe some questions for our own consideration, however our conversation unfolds. So service learning sort of exists on a continuum for education for social change. You may think about the kinds of activities your children or other people's children did in high school or grammar school, the kinds of things you may have done, collecting food cans at Thanksgiving, that kind of thing. So a kind of awareness. And you can think that service learning falls sort of in along a continuum, and eventually people may choose to take courses that are more involved in a particular social issue, maybe around substance addiction or something like that. So service learning is a really important point in the continuum of education for social change. There are different kinds of service learning programs, each with its own structure. Some service learning programs at some universities will require students to serve 8 hours over the course of a semester. It's a one course thing where the instructor is the one who organizes the community service component and everything like that. Pulse exists very differently. In fact, we are different in the sense that in most universities, service learning programs are housed in something like a Center for Community-Based Education or a Center for Service Learning. Pulse is its own program within the Philosophy and Theology Department. With the Center for Teaching Excellence, new at BC, who knows what possibilities that might eventually offer for more sustained conversation around service learning at the university. So Pulse is very different. As a way of example, one of our former assistant directors of Pulse, Michelle Sturk Barrett, went on to do her PhD in higher education at UMass Boston and is now the director of the Donnellan Center for Community-Based Education at Holy Cross in Worcester. Service learning is used in higher ed for a variety of reasons. One might be to reinforce classroom learning. Maybe there's a particular skill that students need to learn. Another is to develop a sense of civic or other kind of responsibility in students. Another reason might be for students to live into a particular mission of a university setting. Another one might be to develop sort of the personal, intellectual, and spiritual dimensions of the students in the program. And then sometimes it's about developing partnerships between the university and their community. So there are multiple reasons why people might be wanting to engage service learning. There are some types of learning that service learning encourages. So I already mentioned sort of the technical or instrumental kind of learning. Cultural learning, learning about difference, learning about being able to accommodate individuals to difference. Political learning, who has power, who doesn't, how is power deployed in social situations. And then sort of the anti-foundational, upends truths, challenges assumptions, all of the different kinds of wonderful things that happen in any kind of cognitive dissonance educational setting. Service learning can have really positive impacts and can also have some really negative impacts. Student positive impact can be personal, intellectual, spiritual, social, and political growth. It can be really, really formative for the individual. It helps cultivate civic engagement and commitment to the public sphere through politics, community, belonging, etc. It's an experience of integrative learning, so students begin maybe to think and put pieces together that they would have just compartmentalized prior. And they may feel empowered to become change agents in their own political sphere, whatever that political sphere might be. For the community partners, there's also an element of goodness. You have relationships with students, and sometimes that's a wonderful infusion of energy into a setting. And also gives them increased person power. Sometimes our community partners in Pulse especially really do rely significantly on our students, especially some of the after-school programs. Some negative outcomes of service learning. Sometimes students will not feel empowered when they leave a program. They can leave a year or a semester, whatever the class may be, with feelings of hopelessness or disempowerment, a kind of fatalism. If the kind of service learning that's engaged isn't done in a thoughtful enough and critical enough way, students can actually reify certain assumptions that they come into at the beginning of the school year about the populations with which they're working. Mm-hmm. So there are dangers involved too, and then for the community partners, students can do a lot of damage if they don't show up when they say they're supposed to, especially in a case where you have an 8-year-old who's waiting for his or her tutor to show up and the tutor never shows up. A lack of sensitivity to whatever the social concerns are that the community partner is addressing. I'm happy to say, for the most part, Pulse does not run into those problems, and that's part of the way we structure the program. So those are more comments about service learning in general. Some general challenges for service learning: it can reify focus on charity, not necessarily justice. It can diminish the role of community organizing as effective tool for social change. It can reify patterns of dominance and inequities and power. And it can perpetuate a non-critical volunteer culture by providing staff for a community organization instead of thinking more structurally about the transformative needs that need to happen in order to have the problem that the community service person is addressing actually maybe go away. There's a paradox going on right now. More and more people are volunteering, but we all know that there's less and less engagement politically and in community organizations. So there's some question around why volunteerism is on the rise, but political engagement is, in a meaningful way, is growing weaker. Service learning works as service learning, as learning and development, not because of the experience itself, but because of the reflective integrative components explicitly designed to foster student learning and development. That critical reflection piece is absolutely necessary. Otherwise, the experience at a placement simply stays as an experience. I've had conversations with students who have done Pulse and who haven't done Pulse but have continued to do volunteer service in various places. And I would say, just anecdotally, there seems to be a difference in the level of critical reflection on where they are serving and the people they've been serving with. I brought some articles. I'm not going to spend too much time on them right now, but one article, well, I can talk about them later if you'd like. All right. Yeah. They're just helpful. They're helpful articles. So what Pulse is, and I think most of you probably know, but it's probably worth going over, is an academic program with a service learning component. It is housed in the philosophy and theology departments. All undergrad students at BC have to take 1 year of philosophy and 1 year of theology. The benefit to Pulse is that all students have to take 1 year of each of those courses. The benefit also to Pulse, though, is that because students have multiple ways of satisfying the core, there is no student in Pulse that does not want to actually be there. So we have the best of both worlds: a structural setup that requires students to actually consider courses like ours, and then the ability to self-select into the group. We also have some electives, about 9 electives. So our capacity this year is up to 500 students. Most of those will be students in the core, which is about 416 students. Faculty are drawn from theology and philosophy. TAs are drawn from theology or philosophy. Students serve 8 hours on site at their community partner until the end of the academic year. So right now,
each week.
So right now we're doing the mutual selection process. Shantari is here. Shantari Baliga is our assistant director in Pulse. And Shantari brings with her a very unique perspective because she had been a supervisor at one of our community partners at Project Bread. So she is bringing the experience and the knowledge of being on site with our students into the office, which is a wonderful, wonderful gift. But is it a little crazy in the office right now?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I never saw this perspective. Uh-huh. You know, my life was about how can I get the students in? I, you know, it was all from that angle. And you just don't see, you know, online scheduling for tours, what does that mean? You mean, wait, it's just about me. How quickly can I get students trained? When can they start taking calls? So this is different.
Yeah.
This is very different. So it's also a lot of fun because just as you said, the students who are in Pulse for a reason. They have that desire to be engaged. And it leaves a very long-lasting impression. So you see passion. You also see nervousness. Mm-hmm. You know, this is where I want to be. Might not actually be where they end up, but at the end of the year, it's invaluable for them. They see something so different. Mm-hmm. And they feel like they can make a difference. Our students feel like they can make a difference. Whether it's this much, doesn't matter. But I think that's what's kind of really cool about the entire process. So.
Let's see. So in addition to Joanne, in addition to Sean Terry, we also have Joanne Etienne, who's program assistant. So we have two full-time staff people in the Pulse office. And right now the students are in the mutual selection process, where they're going on tours, interviewing at particular community partners. The goal is that 2 weeks from yesterday, students will begin their community service for the entire year. This year we have 55 community partners, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's also a lot to manage, which is why we have two full-time staff people. And our relationships with our partners are really, really important. And we consider them our partners in education. Some of them we have partnered with for over 40 years. Wow. The supervisors play an enormous role in the education of our students and sort of role modeling them for them, what it looks like to care about people who are in marginalized situations, and the generosity of spirit and that so many of our supervisors have that they might not have necessarily even considered. They think they're going to work with people and they encounter this whole world in addition. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I think I'm just going to talk about some reasons why we think Pulse works as a service learning program and what some of the challenges are, and then I think I'll stop at that point. Students are in the same placement for an academic year, so they get a chance to develop relationships with the people who are coming to the organization. They also get to know the supervisors. They earn a grade for their work. That is the structural component that really elicits a kind of accountability. It's like all of us. Sometimes we need a buddy to help us be our best selves, and so sometimes having a grade at the end really helps students do their best work. As a service learning program, the Pulse office centralizes all of the management of the community partner relationships, which means that faculty do not need to be worrying about the organizational and management and administrative components beyond a small reasonable amount. So that's a good thing. It leaves faculty to focus on the curricular dimension of the classroom. There's a student leadership group we have for peer support. Not only do they help us manage the program itself and helping students find their particular community partners, but they are peer support and peer leaders, and they are people to go to who have questions. So there are 18 students who have completed the core in Pulse and have been chosen by the previous year's council group to serve on council. Students have the same faculty person for the same academic year, which also elicits relationship, builds relationship, and enables trust. I think sometimes the conversations get really touchy and difficult, and sometimes you can't have those kinds of relationships until February or March. Mm-hmm. So that is also one of the benefits of this course being year-long, is it really gives people an opportunity to get to know one another. And the faculty keep a critical focus on theology and philosophy, and that's our particular strength. They can do what they need to do within their curricular field. Students are in class 3 hours a week, and then additionally 1 hour of discussion. And the discussion period is really important for sharing stories, for sharing challenges, for integrating what's happening in classroom with what's happening at their community service placement, with what's happening in the world. So it becomes an introspective space as well as an intellectual development space. And maybe finally some areas of challenge, I would say, or maybe growth for Pulse. There are some administrative challenges. Weather 2 years ago, for example, all the snow days. So that presented a problem. Sometimes the partners are on vacation and we're not, and vice versa. So that reduces the amount of on-site time. So what do you do with all those down days and how to use them well? Some students never take to Pulse. It just never quite clicks. It's rare, but that happens. And grade expectations and how to help students understand what a grade is from a community partner, and that there are certain expectations around grading. So those are some of the things. In his 2000 Santa Clara address on the service of faith and the promotion of justice, Father Kolbenbach raised three questions for consideration regarding Jesuit education. The first is who students become, the second is what faculty do, and the third is how our universities proceed. He writes, students need a well-educated solidarity, which is learned through contact rather than concepts. When the heart is touched by direct experience, the mind may be challenged to change. Students should learn to perceive, think, judge, choose, and act for the rights of others, especially the disadvantaged and the oppressed. I'd like to believe that is what we have been doing in Pulse since 1969. Thank you. So I had some, we can talk about the Pulse itself. I think Pulse also raises questions of maybe your own experiences with service learning, how to educate our students for political involvement and civic engagement. What is the role of the university? What is our job as educators? Are we for creating citizens? How can we support each other if we're interested in developing service learning courses, et cetera? So those are some things, but yes.
Lynn, can you talk a little bit more about the one-hour discussion sessions a week? Who, is it the faculty who facilitate them, or who is sort of, I'm imagining that sometimes those conversations can be difficult in the ways that you were describing. I work with a lot of BC students who come through a transitional bridge program, who are low-income students of color. And I've had students go through Pulse and have been really uncomfortable about the discussions sometimes in those settings with some of the more privileged students, sort of their responses to going into, and these are, I've had students whose families have participated in some of those programs, and then they're sort of sitting here hearing people, you know, oh my gosh, those people, you know, that kind of thing. And so I sort of always wonder about those discussion spaces, like who facilitates them? Is it the faculty member or something? How do they sort of handle those kinds of challenges?
So I have always led my own discussions, but we have with us Ken Himes and Craig Ford. And Craig, you were his TA, you were Ken's TA 2 years ago. So did
you? Last year.
Oh, last year. Was it just last year?
When I was really young.
When you were really young. So did you lead discussion, or how did you do it?
We each took one group. Uh-huh. We split the class into two. We each took one group, and then at mid-year we flipped it so that both groups had a chance to meet both of us, and we got to know them too. So over the course of the year, you know, you do wind up meeting with each of the groups probably about a dozen times. But that's how we did it. Mm-hmm. Others do it differently, but we did it. We just simply split the responsibility.
And how many kids? How many students? I'm sorry, I should say kids.
Typically 26 in a section, and then in a perfect world, broken into two 13-person sections, discussion sections.
I was just going to add, I think a lot of the space to react and construct took place offline in two ways. So after discussion session, I would check in with Ken and say, this is what happened. And then students would also come to me for office hours, and also the same thing with you. And a lot of times the subject matter would be intersecting in some way with the coursework or not, but it, when it was a way to continue to be accountable to a lot of the dynamics that are happening, you know, like outside of the classroom, that effect you see in the classroom. I mean, you're referring to probably like, you know, privilege and white supremacy and things like that. So that, so students of color particularly, I made sure to be in special contact with them throughout the semester. It helps a lot to have like professors who also like get it, you know. If I don't know what it's like with like the philosophers or whatnot, so but, like, you know, I imagine it would be very challenging if, you know, as a TA, like I'm pointing out like, wow, this is not, this is what's happening, this is what my students of color are going through, and then to have a faculty member Ken weren't so understanding, they'd be like, well, that's not our job, mm-hmm. and that would be really challenging for me. Kristen's lying because she knows how challenging it would be. So that, I just want to point out that a lot of it is intentionality around checking in, but also there's a magic about having people who are equally dedicated to and aware of issues of race and class and sexism and in culture and right. in NPC.
I'm curious how you would characterize Pulse vis-a-vis other service opportunities on campus, engagement opportunities on campus, whether it's RUPE programs to do something abroad, or whether it's local, you know, there's, what is the obvious answer, of course, is that there's classroom experience here, but it's something, there must be a mode or a tone that has some distinction from other types of service programs around campus. How would you characterize that?
Well, I don't want to be competitive,
right? Right, exactly. Besides being much better.
It's not very pulsy to be competitive. I think we are, at the end of the day, we are an academic service learning program, and it's not mm-hmm. to say that there are not required reflection groups for a RUPE or some kind of prep for APA or other, and For Boston has reflection groups. I think what's distinctive about us is this intentional engagement with texts within the, for the most part, Western intellectual tradition, and really trying to help students interrogate some of the underlying values at play in cultural and social decisions, utilizing these thinkers. Mm-hmm. People have struggled with similar questions.
Mm-hmm. Megan, I got two things. You can answer one or both. One's an observation about Pulse uh-huh. and your reaction. The other one is more, Pulse raises the question for the larger society. Uh-huh. The Pulse-directed one is, my experience having taught in Pulse for a number of years is, generally speaking, exceptions on both ways, but generally speaking, I find students who work with adults get more out of Pulse than mm-hmm. students who do some sort of tutoring or working with young people. Mm-hmm. I just don't think the young people offer the challenge to them. They can pretty much stay in their comfort zone. You know, they tutor math or they tutor, you know, English or whatever to, you know, kids. And it's great that they're doing that. Mm-hmm. And there's a bonding that goes on frequently that transcends imparting knowledge. You're giving respect and, mm-hmm. you know, being treated well as a young person, and maybe in your dynamics of your family, you don't get that very much. But nonetheless, it seems to me for the Pulse student, the experience of working with adults, whether it's a suicide hotline, it's homeless people, it's transitional housing, it's a more challenging experience, and I think it awakens more reflection. I don't know if that you get that from other people. That's my comment on Pulse. The other comment is what you mentioned before, the seeming paradox of more volunteerism and yet less civic participation. I see that, mm-hmm. even with the Pulse students. I'm not surprised at that. Mm-hmm. There's a basic generosity and decency among these young people. They do want to give something back or pay something forward, whatever phrase you want to use. But they've also grown up in a society that, at least for the last 35 years, mm-hmm. has told them government's the problem, not mm-hmm. the solution. Mm-hmm. And whether they hear that from their parents or they hear it on TV or they, you know, read about it on social media, the fact is they want to make a difference, and it's been told them, but you can't make a difference using government. Government doesn't make a difference. It only makes things worse. Mm-hmm. And so the volunteerism is, I want to do something, and I got to do it directly myself, mm-hmm. you know, or with a very small localized group or agency. Because once you kick it up to the level of government, it's bureaucracy, it's you know, self-perpetuation of bureaucratic agendas. It's all these sorts of things, and they really have fairly deep skepticism about government. It's interesting. I think Craig and I have talked about this. It's very interesting. You teach like something like Plato's Republic or Aristotle's Politics. So, one of the toughest things they have to get into their heads is they really were human beings who thought public life was important and valuable and good, that you found fulfillment in it. Because they absolutely believe fulfillment is private life, and public life is a waste of time.
Just a couple of things. The research bears out your original observation that students who work with adults tend to have better, different learning outcomes, maybe. Adults can articulate things that children can't. Kids are cute. Adults aren't. other things like that. At a curricular level, one of the benefits of the small group discussions is that if we have 55 community partners and students are in 13-person discussion groups, there's a good possibility that you could have 13 different community organizations represented. So if a student isn't directly having the kinds of exposure that you're talking about, they should be hearing from their classmates. And ideally, what can happen in the discussion space is students are making points of connection among the different community partners, where they're beginning to see issues that on their own they would not necessarily be able to see it. Many Pulse instructors also require something called the Social Analysis Project, which really asks students to interrogate what the underlying causes of the particular problem that's presenting itself are. So it makes them dig a little bit deeper. Just to comment on your second point, I've also read that the community organizations where our students are serving are also have their hands tied, because in addition to skepticism around public life, many of these community organizations are getting grants, et cetera, from various organizations that preclude them from engaging in any kind of organizing or government work that would require, that would enable them to actually advocate more fully for the clients. So I think it's coming from multiple places.
So do you also, you know, teach the concept of kind of like walking with, journeying with, versus, you know, I'm imparting my wisdom on, you know, poor people or whatever. Is it that whole concept that's being conveyed?
We try to do, instead of, you know, we think men and women for others, maybe it should be men and women with others. Mm-hmm. So I think there is definitely a sense of accompaniment. Rachel Remen wrote this article that many Pulse professors use. It's a simple one-page article. I have some copies here if anyone would like it. She looks at what helping is, what fixing is, and what serving is, and tries to sort of interrogate what these three things are to help students begin to move out. I'm going to go help, or I'm going to try to fix, to thinking about what service might mean.
And also, can we put these up on our website so everybody can access them?
Yeah.
We'll put links up on our website, so if you want to reference any of these articles.
Megan, I had a question about the philosophy and theology combination, and the fact that these are self-selective students, but they're also self-selective, having a core requirement to do this. When I taught biblical heritage, there were a number of students who took biblical heritage because it wasn't introduction to Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if you have students who take Pulse precisely because it's theological and philosophical reflection rather than I have to go learn about spirituality or Christianity within a campus that is largely dominated by its Catholic heritage, and how you have, let's call them students with a healthy hermeneutic of suspicion when it comes to religion, and how they interact with the theological elements of Pulse.
I think that's a great question. I think students will take Pulse for multiple reasons. Some of them come out of high schools with strong service traditions, and they just want to keep doing that. Some students are terrified of doing philosophy and theology, and Pulse seems like the least scary way to do their philosophy and theology requirement. Some students are not at all religious and think and are looking to the social action, and some students are really quite attuned to social activism and want to dig in more deeply to what they've already experienced. Those are just four different ways. I think the larger question for anyone teaching any intro core theology is how do you engage theological questions in a non-doctrinal way so as to conduct students into thinking about God or the good or justice so that the question feels live and not forced. And so drawing on their own experiences of how students come to make their own moral decisions, what are the values that they're grounding their choices in, where did those values come from, help connect themselves with the underlying concerns or themes in the course. But yes, we get students who are nervous about their philosophy and theology core.
Again, for your reflection, I should preface by saying, being like Craig did 15 years ago, had really a profoundly positive impact on me.
Yeah.
This is my longest stress, but without service learning. But I have two questions about resistance and unintended consequences, like out of that love, and I look forward to returning to full disclaimer over. First is, as you've scaled up Pulse here in recent years, can you tell me what the faculty response has been in terms of any forms of resistance? So the last university I taught at was one of two of the Jesuit schools that now require service learning, community-based learning of all of its graduates. So that's a really big scale, and it's interdisciplinary. But the more faculty I met with, the more I thought it was less that they felt, this is environmental studies, I've been trained in community outreach, you know, and more about a deeper kind of resistance to decentering themselves in the classroom. So if the community partner is truly a co-educator, that must mean I don't possess all the knowledge. Anyway, I was curious, do you just get to handpick lost person theologians who are on board and you preach to the choir and then it works beautifully? Or has there, tell me about BC. And then my second question is about unintended consequences. Like, I agree that a mentor not showing up, especially for a young person who's been let down by adults in their life, can be really damaging on an individual level. Would you say that otherwise, like, BC's footprint is unequivocally positive in the communities? Like some of those neighborhood initiatives, like Seattle U and Santa Clara have these, let's focus on it. Even those, I worry sometimes about, we started this program, getting all the mothers in our Thriving Neighbors initiatives to walk in my last university, and somebody said, well, there is a lot of backlash at home. The husbands are really upset that the women are getting empowered with these healthy you walks. And, but, you know, I'm sure that I was like, whoa, like, we've done this. We need to know. So I'm just curious, like, do you think that there are ever unintended consequences, or are the relationships so longstanding that you think more person power is unequivocally positive?
For the community partner? Some relationships do come to an end. That happens for various reasons. Sometimes it's not working out on our end. Sometimes it's not working out on their end. And we do have needs. I mean, at the end of the day, Pulse is a service learning program. Our primary focus is going to be the education of our students. And so if a partner can't do what we need them to do, and we do ask them to do a fair amount, but the upside for them is 8 months of students. A relationship will come to an end. We try to maintain really good open communication with our partners so that if something is not going well, we'll hear about it sooner rather than later. I don't think this is getting at your question, but we ask all of our community partners to have complete an evaluation of students, which creates the kind of accountability that is desired. But then these community partners need to grade our students, and that causes all manner of anxiety and discomfort. And sometimes they are so happy they just want to give A's to all the students, and we want to say no, no, no. I'm not getting it what you want.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
No, what about resistance
openness among BC faculty for expanding service learning?
So that's a really good question, and actually I can't answer that question, because in some part, what I've heard from other service learning directors at other Jesuit college, from the AJCU network of service learning directors who work in a more quote-unquote traditional model of service learning, there is, they have experienced resistance, because the question is, well, what's the purpose of the classroom? Is service learning a kind of advocacy that I do or really don't want to do? But with Pulse, because it's within philosophy and theology, it really is faculty who would like to teach in Pulse are I think encouraged to do so. So I don't know what would happen at the university level if there was a push to try and develop more service learning courses. I don't know what would be the result.
Okay, question.
I just wanted to know, so is there a sort of consistency with the students? I know the program only lasts for a year, but are they in terms encouraged to continue volunteering at this location, or is there like a Pulse community that brings everyone together and so that they're still engaging in volunteer work, even though this program might be, typically I know a lot of freshmen and sophomores do it, so are they continuing this sort of like push for service in their time at BC?
Dominic, is it?
Sure.
Do you want to answer that?
I had an amazing experience my sophomore year. I took it with Professor Mullane, and then I actually decided to take two more electives afterward. I took Telling Truths with Professor Hirsch, and then The Meaning and Way of Jesus with Professor Copeland, and that allowed me to go back to my placement and continue, and I'm hoping to go back this year too. And I was at the Haley House, which has the 6 a.m. super but when we were talking about civic engagement, I thought of a program I do with them called Community Tables, and the word community just really sticks out to me. And it's on Saturdays, and you arrive at 3, but the meal starts at 5, and it's pay what you can, pay what you will, and all are welcome. And that's just a great way to meet people, and it's so inspiring. And I always try and tell other BC students, it's on a Saturday, come. The food is excellent, it's delicious, the cafe has awesome cookies, so it's just a great way to continue and keep up with it. And I'm just proud to share it on the BC campus that I was in Pulse, and it seems like other professors are really interested in hearing about the experience too.
We have, we develop a certain number of capacity every year in the program, so if a student wanted to continue, we would not be able to facilitate that. They could, if they wanted, make the initiative with their partner directly. But we do tell them, many will tell them, please don't make any promises. You are not 150% sure you are going to keep. Please, what you can do is offer a good goodbye. You can thank people. You can tell them what you learned, how appreciative you are, and it's okay to end something too. And because that's just part of the warp and woof of life. Go ahead.
Okay. I also just thought too, I think freshman year at BC is really transitional for everyone, that it's easy to kind of just stay on campus. But one thing that I loved about my placement was that I met students from other universities, and you just realize how small a world it is. Oh my goodness, you're from the same town in New York, you know other people from this school. And what's interesting too is that I met a lot of supervisors from the other placements at Community Tables and at the soup kitchen, and we said, oh, you know these other students from BC. And I met a lot of BC alums at the placements who had the same professors that I did, which was really cool. So it was just an amazing network to have, and it made you feel like really part of a community and to be really involved.
Mm-hmm. Bethel.
It's okay to end something, but it depends on how you end it. So what tools do you give the students?
To end the relationship?
Yes.
Well, they structurally, they know that it's going to come to an end. The supervisors know. And we try to tell them that they need to let the people know whom they're working with at least a week or two in advance, that their time is coming to an end. And to thank them.
But that's not my question. What tools do you give the people you're with or helping or whatever? What tools do you give them so that they can continue on the path?
You mean our students or the folks at the agencies?
No. Your students are working with people.
Yeah.
Right? What tools do you share with the people so that the people don't need the student to keep them on the path? Am I getting it wrong?
No. I hear what you're saying. I think I hear what you're saying.
How do you help the people not need the student?
The bigger
issue. Yes. Are students given the tools to convey to their clients, let's say?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a guidance counselor, okay?
Yeah.
So I think this way all the time. When my students leave me, then what?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be?
So I think that's a really interesting question. I'm not sure this will completely address what you're asking. We tend to partner with agencies that have very healthy infrastructure, and that our students, when they leave, that the agency is capable of continuing the work with the particular group of people. While the agency may rely heavily on the Pulse students, they're capable of continuing some of the work
with the client.
And actually, it's a really interesting thing, because for Pulse students, and I think maybe students in general, you want to be remembered personally. What the client, for lack of a better word, might remember is, oh, that student from Boston College came. Mm-hmm. Oh, and this year they're going to have more students from BC. And then the next year, they may not remember the person's name, but they remember that there were students from BC. I'm not sure that's getting
or
exactly.
Or they may remember.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes. But I encountered which was very interesting. I encountered a young woman who was part of a mentorship program who had multiple years of BC mentors. She didn't remember any of her mentors' names. To me, that's okay, because
it's okay.
Yeah.
But she remembered the mentor.
That's right.
And that's what's important.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Oh, well, this is just a very simple question, but I wonder if you could just tell us about a few of your partners. 55, but who are they? We know Haley House now, right?
Haley House.
Tutoring. Who else do you work
with?
Let's
see. Pine Street Inn, Rosie's Place.
Project Bread.
East Boston Neighborhood Health Center. St. Mary's Center for Women and Families and Children.
Victory Programs.
It's Italian House, right?
Italian Home for Children. Multiple after-school programs. West End House, Bird Street Community Center, St. Stephen's after-school programs.
Okay.
Suffolk House of Correction, Middlesex DA, Domestic Violence Advocacy Unit.
Suicide Hotline.
Samaritans. Yep. Boston Mobilization, which is more of a... anti-oppression organization that goes into high schools and teaches students about racism, heterosexism, et cetera.
I'm wondering what training you give to the students that go to clients, more along the lines of their own personal safety.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't know who you're going to be with. You don't know what. Obviously, they're with people with these companies because there's things that have happened in their lives. So how do you kind of train the students for their, you know, how to take care of themselves, but also to read and realize when something may become a problem?
So that's great. We do offer we'll have two sessions this year, just street smarts that we encourage students to go to, especially if they're unfamiliar or uncomfortable with public transportation. This is why the relationship with the supervisor is really, really important, that the student feels comfortable going to the supervisor if a safety issue arises. Most students are in public spaces where there are going to be lots of other people around them so that they're not alone with a particular person. Yeah.
I have a question about on the curricular side.
Yeah.
Just because we crafted the syllabus to attend it together, and I'm just curious. I love about these philosophers. But when we're thinking of, you know, there are some things that, you know, Karen and I are really jazzed about teaching, and other people were like, let's move through. You know, and I'm wondering, yes. And I wonder about how, you know, faculty members could get, or even teachers could get, resources for, like, oh, there's this article by this person that's more interesting than I thought this person was capable of writing. If you don't like that person very often, or something like that reflects that, you're like, I'm disinclined to read this because this gets in the way of something else. But you want to be, and you desire to be, as capacious as possible. And I say that not only to criticize myself, but like I would love, like sometimes like, oh yes, that should be right there. And just like, is there a repository for that sort of thing? Because the trade-off is that if they do all of their philosophy and theology in 1 year, that's the end of their, mm-hmm. most of their philosophical and theological careers. Mm-hmm. And I found that one of the most interesting parts of my development as an undergrad was taking different professors, different syllabi across, because I grew up different, like each year I was not a different person, but I was realizing things differently. And I found that that was just as important to my maturation as a thinker and as a person as getting an intellectual breadth. So mm-hmm. if we can't get the time factor, is there some way to like communicate to find that there's a lot of resources for your own curricular design?
It's funny you should ask that. We do. As a faculty, we meet every spring for 2 days. And a lot of it is the hit parade of what worked well, what didn't work well this year. Do you have any suggestions? And over the past couple of years, we've started doing a shared text that all the sections will read, if for no other reason than to have one thing that everyone has read. But it's a good way to share. And so while the syllabus itself is not mandated by the program, there is an awful lot of overlap among the faculty. Part of that is simply because it is a core level course, and there are certain things you want to cover in a core level course. But if something works well for someone, we share the good news. And we also now, thanks to Google Drive and things like that, we can have shared folders with resources.
I didn't mean to throw you under the bus there. I'm sorry. You did that.
Well, I was interested in your question about privileged students taking part in Pulse and less privileged students taking part in Pulse. And so I guess I'm wondering, is there one sort of overarching, can you articulate the one overarching thing you want everyone to take away from Pulse? Huh. Or is it too, I mean, is that an oversimplification, or is it too diffuse?
For me, what I want students to end the year with is a knowledge about social issues and the people who are harmed by policies, and the students' ability to believe and know that they can actually do something about it and not give in to a kind of hopelessness or fatalism that says nothing can change, why bother trying? That's what I hope.
Seems worthwhile.
What?
It seems worthwhile.
I'm interested in, do you want to say more on that? Mm-hmm. One of the things I try to work on in my classes, and we care about a lot at the Boise Center, is learning how to talk to one another. Both in our own lives, it's hard to talk about some of these issues, and also students, of course, are coming in with different things, and it's often the case that the things that matter most to them are the hardest to discuss. The things that shape them the most, Craig alluded to this a little bit, and Trizanne also, about things that are fundamentally challenging to them. Can I say this out loud? How can I say it out loud? How do I manage change in my value structure? And how do I express that as an engaged citizen? These are all really crucial content things, but the process is also really crucial of how do we learn to talk about these things. And the structures that universities sometimes provide can be incredibly overwrought, and very determinative. This is not okay ever to say, or tough, suck it up. This is always okay to say, or, we heard this from Chicago, recently there in marketing, my alma mater. And so we're trying out programs here to see how different things work. And I'm trying it out in my classes as well, and all of you are going through this as well. And I wonder if you wanted to reflect on that, and others who have taught Impulse, what this reflection space looks like, mm-hmm. so that you have somewhat countervailing missions. One is to shape someone in a holistic way that's consistent with maybe Jesuit educational formative values or an inclination towards social justice, but at the same time, you are also trying to get them to have their voice and to find a way to articulate their values, and those may not be coincident, maybe not now, maybe not ever. What do you do about that? How are we to think about that?
I think that's a really interesting question, and this inclusive classrooms cohort that just started through the Center for Teaching Excellence that I'm going to be part of this year, the question was, what is an inclusive classroom? And I was thinking about how to create hospitality in a space. And part of that for me was informed by my own experiences of not feeling like I was in an inclusive classroom as a student, both from what you might expect to be a more sexist framework, but also another experience I had that's actually informed significantly how I approach my own teaching is I remember in my master's, my MDiv program, we had to do the ministry seminar, and there were speakers talking about institutionalized racism. And this person gave an example of a story, and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get why this is an example of institutionalized racism. But I also had the feeling that if I'd said, I don't get it, it was not a safe thing for me to have said. So it's this balance between how do we create a space where students can say, I don't get it, and not feel like they're going to be shamed. But also then how do we hold up students who may be hurt or have their personhood hurt by the things that some students say? And it's hard. And I think sometimes it's following up one-on-one. Sometimes it's addressing a particular issue. Sometimes it's coming back to something in a way that's not explicitly directed at a particular student. This happens in the Pulse office with Pulse Council students. They like to argue all the time with each other, and that's a wonderful thing. They need to feel free to argue with each other and be respectful at the same time of the persons in the space. So I think it's a really important question, and I don't have a concrete answer to that.
I really love my discussion group when I took Pulse, and Professor Mullane really emphasized at the beginning the importance of encounter, and that you're going to see things that will make you uncomfortable, and that we all have seen different things in our lives, but it's important to share it, but that it's also really about storytelling, not only a placement, but in the classroom. And when we mentioned traveling to the placements and safety, what was interesting is that that was really a significant part of our conversation, that was really part of the placement itself. That if you took a bus to a placement, if you took the train every morning when I went to the Haley House, we'd see the same woman who slept in a box by the bus station with newspaper for warmth, and we talked to her. But when you see stuff like that, that's part of the service experience too. And I think traveling to the placement was almost like a journey or a pilgrimage in itself. And if you're religious, that kind of made you at a place trust in God in a way. So that was really part of the experience, and it emphasized encounter. And I think that actually made it easier for people to talk about that I saw this and I want to share it, because I know that if I talk about it, we can maybe make a difference.
Well, this has been really terrific. Do you have last question?
No, okay. this is just interesting for me. I was just thinking about like all the hundreds of students, and I'm just thinking about how they would love to be heard.
Well, they can listen to it. I'd like to invite you to invite
a bigger room.
That's right. I'd like to invite you to visit our website. And it's many, many lovely things you'll find therein. Most importantly, though, thank you, Megan. Megan and I are classmates here at BC. We arrived together and have been fellow travelers. And it's such a pleasure to know that you're the boss over there, and that things are still going great. And I want to thank all you for being here to support what we're up to. And this has been a real pleasure. Come see us again.
Thank you.
Email us the SITS name one for students.